We are continuing our look into John chapter 8. We're going to be looking at verses 31 through 59 this morning. Verse 31 reads, "So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, 'If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples.'" This chapter ends, "So they picked up stones to throw at him. But Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple." These are the opening and closing verses. What do you make of it? The Jews who had believed in him picked up stones to throw at him. We've been kind of working through the book of John, and we've spent the last about 6 weeks, I think. And so we're going to spend this week, and then I'm going to take a week or two of a break from John and talk about other things. I think I need to kind of regroup and think before we get into the next section of John. So next week, my plan is to kind of speak on Daniel chapter 4. I've also been working slowly through the book of Daniel, and so we'll resume that next week. But back to John. Where are we? Chapter 8. Where is this? It's at the Feast of Shelters in Jerusalem, at the temple, probably in the women's court, near the offering box. Jesus had just finished a discussion about light and judgment with the Pharisees. And verse 30, the verse immediately preceding the section that we'll be looking at, reads, as Jesus was saying these things, many believed in him. In verse 31, which we just read, "So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him," and so on. In verse 31, as I mentioned last week, that "in" is properly omitted. It's not present in the Greek. What I think John is trying to differentiate here is that "in" or "on," whenever he writes "believe in" or "believe on him," it means more than simply believing, an intellectual belief. It's more of a trust. And so, I think what it's saying is in verse 30, many people did believe and did trust. Verse 31 identifies a different group. It could be a subset of the group in verse 30. If verse 30 is understood to mean, you know, everyone who believes, whether on or simply believed, then verse 31 identifies a smaller subset of that group who simply believed. Maybe it was something like, you know, this group believed Jesus because they didn't like the Pharisees, and because Jesus had embarrassed the Pharisees, they decided that it might be okay to go along with Jesus. Now there's a saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Maybe it was similar to that. It was a very superficial kind of belief. In any case, there is a distinction that's made. And so it's this other group, this superficial belief group, that Jesus argues with in the remainder of this chapter. So, in my attempt to better understand and get a handle on what John is trying to communicate in this last half of chapter 8, I've broken the passage into four sections, and we're going to look at each of these four sections this morning. The first section goes from 31 through 37. The second section goes from 38 through the first half of verse 41. Section 3 from the second half of 41 through 47. And section 4 from 48 to 59. So, section 1, verses 31 through 37. "So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, 'If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.' They answered him, 'We are offspring of Abraham and have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say, you will become free? Jesus answered them, Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I think we all know the famous phrase in this section, the truth will set you free. And that is certainly true. And I think based on that, many, and maybe even most Christians, make an effort to teach and spread, and sometimes even pound, our idea of truth into people. With perhaps less than spectacular results. My suggestion this morning is that is not what Jesus wanted his hearers to understand. The Jews' response to Jesus shows that their thinking and our frequent line of thinking in regards to truth is quite similar. They believed that they knew the truth, so they were free. Jesus says, no, you don't understand. Knowing the truth is not where you start. Knowing the truth is the result of something more fundamental. And that fundamental act is to abide in Jesus' word. In this whole section, 31 through 37, abiding is the key idea. Verse 31, the word abide means to remain or to stay. In verse 33, the Jews claim to have always been, or shall we say, remained, Abraham's children. Verse 34, the phrase, commits sin. Everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. That commits sin actually means a continual participation in sin. Or, we can say, an abiding in sin. It's not these mistakes that people make from time to time. No, it's the abiding in sin that verse 34 talks about. Then in verse 35, we again see the word remain or abide. And finally, in verse 37, Jesus says, my words find no place in you. In other words, he's saying that, to the Jews that he's speaking to, my words don't abide in you. The key idea here is abiding. And so, we could rephrase Jesus' words in verses 31 and 32 as follows. If you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples. If you abide in my word, you will also know the truth. And if you abide in my word, so that you know the truth, then the truth will set you free. I believe the order is critical. Our nature is we want to solve problems, so our tendency is to jump to the last part, which is the final result of everything that comes before. We want to fix the problem, so let's get to it, but we forget the first part. Just a few more ideas in this first section. The idea of house in verse 35 came across a verse in Psalm chapter 90, this is verse 1, where it's attributed to a song of Moses. It says, Lord, you have been our dwelling place in all generations. So that house, there's an idea that it's not heaven necessarily that Jesus is talking about, but maybe it's God himself. God himself is the house that we should be seeking. If we compare verses 32 and 36, it reads very close. It says, truth sets free and sun sets free. So the implication there is that the truth and the sun are equivalent. In verse 36, there's an interesting alternate interpretation that can be made. Instead of capital, if the Son, so if the capital Son sets you free, rather it's if the lowercase Son sets you free. The interpretation there is that becoming a son sets a person free. And that would go along with the idea in that John has already brought out in some of the earlier chapters of being born again, of being born from above, of becoming a son of God. And finally, we look at verse 32 and verse 37 together. Verse 32 reads, "And you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And verse 37 reads, "I know that you are offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my words find no place in you." Jesus knows. No, it's about knowing. These two verses speak of knowing. Jesus knows that the Jews he is addressing knows the intellectual truth, but because his words do not abide in them, they are not true sons of Abraham. And so the implication, this implication leads into the next section, verses 38 through 41, the first half. "I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father." They answered him, "Abraham is our father." Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing what Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing what your father did." It's fairly straightforward. The key idea of this section is imitation, or imitating, repeating after one of two fathers. Verse 38. It compares Jesus versus the Jews that he's addressing. Jesus says, "I speak of what I have seen. I'm repeating what I know." He's saying to the Jews, "You're doing what you have heard." Imitation, repetition. Verse 40, "I told you the truth I heard from God," repeating what he has heard. Verse 41, "But you are doing what your father did." Although Jesus doesn't say exactly what he repeats from the Father, by looking at verse 40, we can infer the main thrust of Jesus' message from his Father. The Jews who are being addressed are being accused of seeking to take life. Therefore, the truth that Jesus heard from the Father, from God, is that God seeks to give life. And the Jews that are hearing Jesus, well, are understanding the implications of Jesus' words here. What Jesus is saying is that what I'm saying and doing is different from what you're doing. And the implication that Abraham is not their father. And so the Jews insist that Abraham is their father. But in verse 40 to 41, Jesus clearly implies that their claim is false. Oh, sure, in a literal sense, it may be true, and it is, but Jesus is getting at their misconception of salvation. The Jews, the common teaching was that because they were physically descended from Abraham and because they had the law, they could not become slaves to sin. And therefore they were free. And therefore they were guaranteed salvation. Jesus is telling them that their physical ancestry, their knowledge of the law, and their efforts and traditions to observe the law mean nothing when it comes to salvation. And so they are deeply offended, highly insulted, and go on to defend themselves. Which leads us into the next section. Now, from 41, the second half, through verse 47. They said to him, "We were not born of sexual immorality. We have one Father, even God." Okay, so if Abraham, if Jesus is saying they aren't sons of Abraham, then the other option is that they were somehow born of an adulterous relationship. And perhaps a second implication is that there's implying that Jesus was born that way. Because, where is his father? Was Joseph really his father? That's what they're getting at. So they try to turn the accusations around. And they continue, "We have one Father, even God." Okay, so there's no question now what they're saying, what they're claiming. They're claiming to be sons of Abraham, and they're claiming that they belong to God. And Jesus said to them, "If God were your father, you would love me. For I came from God and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and has nothing to do with the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God." The Jews portrayed here clearly knew and understand what Jesus was getting at. Now, if the appeal to Abraham wasn't clear enough, they made sure that Jesus knows that they believe they belong to God. In their retort, in their defense, their implicit accusation is that Jesus is the one speaking lies. In verse 47, Jesus claims that they don't belong to God. So they say they belong to God. Jesus says, no, you don't. So only one of them can be telling the truth. One has to be lying. Which is which? This section shows Jesus giving some of the signs of identity, some of the signs of belonging, how one can know whether one is telling the truth or one is lying. Identity and belonging are demonstrated through actions. Verse 42, those who belong to God love Jesus. Verse 47, those who belong to God hears, which can mean more than simply hearing, the physical act of hearing. It means understands, accepts, and responds to. So those who belong to God understands, accepts, and responds to the words of God. In verse 43, 45, and 46, those who do not belong to God cannot comprehend. So this is the opposite side. They refuse to accept and respond to the truth, or they twist the truth and turn it into deception. And in fact, verse 44, those who do not belong to God cannot understand and accept truth because, like their father, the devil, they won't have anything to do with the truth. And not only that, they desire to seek to destroy and kill. Again, here's an implied contrast between Jesus and his opponents. They seek to take life. Jesus seeks to give life. So who is telling the truth? Jesus or those he is addressing? The final section from 48 to 59 makes it clear which is which. The Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Jesus answered, "I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father and you dishonor me. Yet I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. Truly, truly, I say to you, if anyone keeps my word, he will never see death. The Jews said to him, Now we know that you have a demon. Abraham died, as did the prophets. Yet you say, if anyone keeps my word, he will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who died? And the prophets died. Who do you make yourself out to be? Jesus answered, If I glorify myself, my glory is nothing. It is my Father who glorifies me, of whom you say, He is our God. But you have not known him. I know him. If I were to say that I do not know him, I would be a liar just like you. But I do know him, and I keep his word. Your father, Abraham, rejoiced that he would see my day. He saw it and was glad. So the Jews said to him, You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham? Jesus said to them, Truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. So they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. The exchange between Jesus and some of these, the Jews here, has gone from a debate to a heated argument to a shouting match, and now it's gotten downright nasty. The Jews know that Jesus is speaking truthfully about them, and they have no more excuses to give. They start hurling insults and names. It's a classic response when someone is backed into a corner and they know they don't have any other arguments left, and the other party is right. The technical term for this is ad hominem abusive or argumentum ad personam fallacy. This section opens with the Jews falsely accusing, or shall we say lying, about Jesus. Jesus refutes the accusation in verse 49 and turns the accusation back on them. In verse 54, Jesus repeats the Jews' false claims about themselves. He is our God. And then in verse 55, Jesus refutes the Jews' false claim about themselves and then makes the claim that he is the one who belongs to the Father because he knows the Father. In these four sections, the first three are actually kind of what's called the inverted parallelism structure, where you have kind of parallels working their way into the center of each section. So the first three sections that we discussed are structured kind of like that. This last section changes that and goes into step parallelism, where verse 48 and verse 54 are kind of mirroring each other, and they follow kind of, more or less, not precisely, but follow through the rest of this section. Verse 51. So verse 51 contrasts or parallels verse 55. They both contain the phrase, keeps my word. This reminds us, I think, of the concept of abiding, which was in the first section we examined. Also, it speaks to the whole issue of what is truth. The Jewish concept of truth is more than factual accuracy. It's about what is real and what is fantasy. It's also about integrity in keeping one's word. So, to the Jews, to the Hebrews, truth is not just about intellectual exercises, but truth is something that is shown through actions. So we can see how this last section continues the thrust and the theme of the preceding three. Verse 51 also contains the phrase, he will never see death. In the Greek, it's even more emphatic. It can be read, he will never see death forever. And I believe this again ties this section back to the first, where we read, the slave does not remain in the house forever, but the son remains forever. I think the English translation, as it's usually done, misses that last forever word that is critical and key to understanding that this ties back to the abiding. The Jews bring up Abraham again in their argument against Jesus. In verse 53, they ask if Jesus is greater than Abraham, and if so, who is he? The parallel verse, 57, they ask again if Jesus is greater than Abraham. And in verse 58, Jesus answers both questions. Is he greater? And who is he? He says, yes, I'm greater. And I am. And this refers back to Exodus 3:14, or 3:13 and 14, where Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Jesus, in his response, answers that he is Yahweh, the God of Israel. These Jews, as angry as they were still, you know, okay with believing Jesus to be a great teacher or even a prophet. And perhaps that's also what was meant by believed in him in verse 30. But they are definitely not okay with someone walking around them claiming to be God. Not just a God, but the God. The God that brought them out of Egypt. And so, they follow their natural inclinations, their true father's desires, and they pick up stones to try to stone Jesus. And so the answer to who is speaking truth and who is lying becomes very clear at this point, because they identify who their father is by their actions. Putting together these ideas of abiding in Jesus' words, keeping his word, truth, integrity, idea of forever, of eternal life, which is implied by the never see death that Jesus speaks of. I believe it is safe to conclude that freedom is life. And since abiding in truth brings freedom, then truth is life. Going back to Zacchaeus' story, although it's from a different gospel account, different author, I think it illustrates quite well what Jesus was trying to get his hearers in John 8 to do. The word rendered or translated stay, you know, I want to stay in, at your house tonight, is the same word as abide, as remain. Jesus was saying to Zacchaeus, I want to abide with you. I want to remain with you. I want to stay with you. And Zacchaeus' response is the one that the Jews should have given in John 8. Zacchaeus hurried and received Jesus gladly. Zacchaeus didn't make excuses about why Jesus should wait or why he should wait and, you know, maybe set up an appointment when he's less busy. No. He did it then and now. About 6 weeks ago, the sermon asked, who is Jesus? The people in today's passage ask the same question at the end, who are you? And Jesus replies, I am. And during these past weeks, we've discovered what some of Jesus' I ams are. I am the source of living water. I am the light of the world. I am the truth that sets you free. I am the healer and the restorer. And we also discover that each of these points to something even greater. It points to I am life itself. I am the life giver. And if you get a chance this next week, I'd encourage you to review John's prologue, John chapter 1, verses 1 to 18, and compare that with what we've learned in John chapters 7 and 8. And also look at John's first letter, because a lot of the things that he talks about is similar, and they help us understand more of what's going on here. And so I believe that Jesus asks the same question of us that he asked of Zacchaeus. I want to stay with you today. I want to give you life, life that is real, life that will stay, will remain, will abide forever. Will you invite me home? And so, what is your response today? And is there someone you know who today could use real life? Maybe you're the water. Maybe you're the light through whom God wants to extend the invitation to someone.